Well, we know a few things, right? That America's energy future is changing. We've known that for some time. I've talked a bit about this irrational rush to renewables, but that's maybe pulling back a little bit because I think we're understanding energy, our energy needs is not something we can take lightly. Right? And America is still powered today primarily by petroleum and natural gas, right? It's not the electricity. That's sort of a different area. But when we talk about our energy picture, we are still talking about the value, the importance of energy, like petroleum and natural gas, and how they play a part. And Montana, of course, is a huge player in this. We have got some resources. We have got some abilities here. And today we're going to explore all that. There's the Bridger Pipeline that we'll talk about a bit later on too. Permitting process, taxes on our petroleum industry. That ahead with a ton of great guests today as we are live from the Montana Petroleum Association annual convention at the Doubletree in Billings, Montana today on Voices of Montana. So the Doubletree Hotel in Billings, Montana, been doing this on an annual basis. The Montana Petroleum Association. It's their annual convention here. Their guest speaker today will be Tad True. He's with Bridger Pipeline. And actually, Bill Salvin's going to join us from Bridger Pipeline in just a little bit. Might wrangle up some folks from Chord Energy a bit later on, too. And we're going to kick this off with a guy who knows, as just we're chatting here, Steve, you know a ton about this industry. Steve Durrett is the president of the Montana Petroleum Association and Double D Energy. We talked last time, Steve, about, Double D Energy as well. There's a ton of things on your plate. How you been?
Good.
Mostly good?
Things are picking up. So,
well, they are, aren't they?
Yes.
In terms of energy, and I know having the change at the administrative level, at the White House made a big difference, I think, as well. Becomes, I think, problematic for you guys because it's inconsistent, every 4 to 8 years, so to speak. But what do you see?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that the previous administration was very, very, detrimental to the industry and the rules that they were trying to promulgate. We've seen a lot of that go backwards, in our favor, making it a little easier to get things done. But it could change again. Every election, it's like it's a whipsaw back and forth and back and forth. And it's hard to make. You're making long-term decisions and, capital allocation decisions in an uncertain regulatory environment. That's just a very difficult thing to do.
And when you say that, capital allocations, it's not somebody's piggy bank. I mean, there are large amounts of capital involved in this as well. So,
And our, just an example, a typical four-well Bakken pad in eastern Montana, that's a $50, $60 million project. And you can't make those kind of investment decisions if you don't know what kind of regulatory environment you're going to be facing down the road.
What do you see now? I mean, I think the president picked off some low-hanging fruit. I think we've seen in other areas, not just in energy, but in a lot of areas, the burden of overburdensome regulations, so to speak. What do you see now?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely seen a shift back to a more, industry-friendlier environment. But there's only so much can be done at the top because the agencies involved, the Bureau of Land Management, the EPA, et cetera, they have these entrenched bureaucracy that there's only so much you can do from the top down. And we've really got to, work harder at trying to get the process itself a little more streamlined.
That's at the national level too. What kind of challenges overall? I mean, we talked about the regulations a little bit too, but what other things are you facing when it comes to America's energy?
Well, I mean, I think we hear a lot of talk about people say we need to reduce our consumption of oil and gas, and people say that, but I don't think they quite realize the reduction in lifestyle that would require. I made this comment several times before that I can walk into my local supermarket in the dead of winter, and I walk into the produce department, and I look at everything that I have, virtually anything I want, I can get. Where did that come from? It wasn't grown here. And back in our grandparents' days, they relied on, canned goods all winter, or whatever they could put up. And, this stuff, I mean, look, nothing against wind and solar and all of that, but, that produce didn't get here on a wind farm.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people are facing that reality. I mean, for the longest time, the narrative was driven, differently, so to speak. But do you see that there's more, in my mind, I'm going to call it common sense, but do you see that there's more common sense coming back into the necessity of having a good energy structure?
Well, I mean, I think so. And again, it's systemic all up and down, and certainly the current administration has tried to, reverse some of the more egregious things that the prior administration had tried to force on us. But again, there's so much uncertainty going forward that it's difficult to make these long-term plans. You're talking about these wells that are, 20, 30-year economic life,
yeah.
And you're trying to make decisions based on what's going on right now, not knowing what's going to go on in a couple of years.
And it can bite you, right?
Absolutely,
yeah.
It can. Yeah.
And you would know. You've been in the industry a little bit.
Yeah, longer than probably most people would realize. Yeah.
And maybe there's some sad stories you want to relate here.
I've seen it all. But, yeah, what we see now, though, the evolution of the shale development. In the old days, we used to have a thing we called dry holes. Maybe one out of every 10 wells, we would find something that was economic. And now it's not a question of finding it. We know where it is. We have these vast shale deposits, the Bakken in Montana, North Dakota, the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania, and the Permian down in Texas, and vast, vast deposits. And we've always known they were there. We just didn't have the technology to extract it. And with the evolution of advanced horizontal drilling techniques and hydraulic fracturing has enabled us to extract those resources that we simply weren't physically capable of.
Steve Durrett is with us, president of the Montana Petroleum Association. We're at their annual convention downtown in Billings, Montana, here today. And we'll be joining us here, and Tad True, vice president and COO of that company, is one of the main speakers here. And then a fellow named Bill Salvin will join us here to talk more about Bridger. Why don't you give us some thoughts on Bridger as well, as we're talking about the window of opportunity. They're trying to take advantage of that here.
Yeah, I mean, look, it'd be a huge economic boon to the state. Ted'll give you much more specifics about the actual dollars involved here, but certainly it's something we support and we really hope he can get forward. I know they're deep into the permitting process now, but it seems like it's going fairly well. But yeah, Ted'll give you much more specifics on that.
There's things on your plate legislatively, and the permitting process is one of them. And you not only have to accomplish that across the country, but you also have to accomplish it here in Montana, too.
Yeah, the applications for permit to drill in Montana, we're seeing a huge uptick in that, particularly in the eastern part of the state. And we have our permits at this point are only good for 6 months. And we are going through, we have legislative a draft bill that we're going to go under, which is going to, and our permit fees, by the way, have not increased since 1978. And so we are going to seeking legislative approval to increase our permit fees because it's the Board of Oil and Gas, which processes these permits, has seen a huge uptick in their level of activity. And we need the additional funding to help cover that.
I got a message here, a text message, and let's kind of go right into it. It goes along with permitting as well. But Bill in East Helena, thanks for your text today. What would it take to get more refineries in the U.S.? It seems that that's what's also needed.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact date, but there hasn't been a new refinery built in the U.S. in a couple of decades at least. And it's like anything else. Everyone thinks we need more, but no one wants one in their backyard. And it's just, we just need a push to get it done. I don't really know. I don't know the answer, but clearly that's the issue.
Yeah. So it's going to take some capital investment, right?
Absolutely. Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
And, to build a new refinery.
And then that's not something that people are going to do very lightly either.
No.
So how do we? How do we get more refineries, Steve?
Yeah, I wish I knew the answer to that, honestly. We have some refinery people here. I'm not a refinery person. I came from the drilling side of the business, but we certainly have some people here that are much more of an expert on the refining side than I am.
Let's go back into the drilling side then, and the upstream side of it, so to speak. And there's three places. You guys will hear the experts here today talk about the upstream, the midstream, and the downstream. And the upstream is the drilling side of things.
Correct.
Technology. It's changing an awful lot. What is that horizontal drilling? How's that process?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the ability now, we just in Montana, we just approved our first five-mile lateral well. And what that is, you're drilling 2 miles down, then going sideways for another 5 miles, 7 miles of total drilling, and can do it with remarkable accuracy. And the technology involved is just amazing. The other thing it's enabled us to do in the early 2000s was the Elm Coulee development, the first round of the Bakken. That was done with the older technology that we don't have today, and now we have companies that are coming back into Elm Coulee and redrilling that area with modern technology and doing quite well with it. So we have a lot of that potential to do there as well. So,
and that's very encouraging to hear too.
Yeah.
Because we have some old oil fields in Montana.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And we were just up in the Conrad area and went north almost to Canada there on a For the Farmers tour, and saw a lot. That's probably one of the oldest oil fields in Montana. Does technology get more out of that area?
Yeah, there's certainly that possibility. I haven't seen any horizontal drilling up there, but there are other enhanced recovery techniques that may be applicable to the old areas up there, the cut bank and that type of stuff. It's always economically driven, and that tends to be right now probably less economically attractive than doing the shale place, just gotcha. Because there's so much more certainty.
Taxes. That's something that you guys will pick up, and a lot of people are trying to straighten that out, property taxes in Montana, but you're finding it's prohibitive for some of these companies.
Yeah, the biggest issue with the Montana Petroleum Association is essentially assessed stuff, the pipelines, the refineries, et cetera. And, you know, we're hoping to get some reform along those lines, but it's hugely oppressive. I know I'm not speaking for Phillips, but the plant manager at Phillips told me that they pay more in taxes for the Billings refinery than they pay for the one in Washington State.
Oh, and really?
Yeah. And it's clearly the centrally assessed stuff. It's got to be addressed. And I don't have the answer, but I know that we have some very smart people that are trying to get that sorted out.
Gotcha. So you don't have any specific proposals in that regard, but this is not a small bite of the apple. I mean, you're talking not just oil industries, but every industry, every residential home, schools. What's your sense of confidence that there will be some kind of relief that is going to work its way down to your industry?
Everyone in the state agrees that we need some property tax reform. Nobody wants it to be at their expense. And that's always the challenge, the push-pull. The money's got to come from somewhere, and it wants to come from somewhere else. And, you know, we think we're already overly taxed. Other people might disagree, but that's just the fact of life. Of course, reducing government spending never seems to come up.
Right. Well, it does on this show, because
yeah,
we know how important it is.
Yeah.
Steve Durrett, thank you so much for stopping by.
Well,
thanks for
you.
The work you do, too.
All right. Appreciate
that. Steve is the president of the Montana Petroleum Association, and we're live at their annual conference here at the Doubletree in downtown Billings. One thing that's on our plate here is we are live once again from the Montana Petroleum Association. Welcome back to Voices of Montana. Tom Schultz alongside is pipelines. In Montana, we have, I'm not sure how much. It's a rather large number. I wish I could remember it because it makes an impact. Bridger Pipeline, there's a proposal build this pipeline once again, kind of from the really northern border, the High Line. It'll run through Montana. I'll have Bill Salvin talk about that route here as well. But I think, Bill, as I welcome you, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to be with you, Tom. Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks you for coming on. I appreciate that,
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Pipeline safety is one thing I think that we have talked about quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand the value of it. There's always groups out there that might have a different agenda regarding oil and things like that. But I think in Montana, we were happy to see this Bridger Pipeline proposal. Tell me about it.
First off, we're very excited about the project, and we have received great support from the landowners. It will mostly go through private land. There's only a small, I think about 62 miles, that go through federal land and a little bit state land here in Montana. But it's going to start in Phillips County at the U.S.-Canadian border, and it's going to run 430 miles through Montana. So we'll come south about 25 miles in Phillips County, and then we're going to go due east for about 100 miles. And that protects us and keeps us from going across the boundary of the Fort Peck Reservation.
Gotcha.
In the previous project that was suggested, the route that was going through didn't cross the reservation, but it did cross the Missouri River upstream of the water intakes for the reservation. And the tribe was rightfully very concerned about that. So having learned about those concerns, we decided to change the route and not go upstream of those water intakes. We're going to go downstream. Then we're going to go down the eastern side. And the great part about going down the eastern side is we already have pipelines, and other companies have pipelines in that corridor. So we're building through existing pipeline corridors. And that, to us, you're dealing with landowners that in many cases we've had relationships for decades with. They have pipelines of ours that run across lands, so we're very excited about the support we've received from our landowners, and this is a vital national security or energy security project for the United States.
It is, absolutely.
And I know you mentioned pipeline safety is an issue, and we are building this line state of the art safe, brand 36-inch pipeline, brand new. It's going to have a leak detection system on it that is run by artificial intelligence. And we actually, with IBM, designed this leak detection system.
Oh, really?
And we can. The great thing about AI, I know everyone thinks AI is going to eat the world.
I know. Yeah.
This is not the AI we're talking about. This is the great thing for AI. It's pattern recognition. So it can detect really small deviations and pick up a leak, an alarm, and a controller can react to that in seconds instead of minutes. And if you do have an issue on your pipeline, that shortened time frame limits the amount that can escape from the pipeline, because you can shut it down and close it in, as our controllers are very good at doing.
How long has that technology been around?
We started that company in 2019.
Okay.
So, and it's on all of our mainline transmission lines that we run, and it has done very well. And we've also sold the technology and are using it on other pipeline systems. And an important point to stress, I think, is that in addition to the leak detection system, pipelines are the safest way to transport crude oil.
Yep.
You don't want to put it on rail cars, because trains can derail, and you certainly don't want to put it on trucks, because you can't transport that much, and that's a lot of trucks on the roadways.
It is, yeah. So. And that's something I think that I hope the world does recognize, so to speak, that value of pipelines there. That's one of the misnomers, I think, and there's probably some misinformation about that, but it is a safe way to transport oil, and we need oil still greatly in our society.
We do need oil, and just last month, the statistics on how much, where all the energy that the world uses, 86% still comes from oil, coal, and natural gas.
Yep.
Despite all the great strides we've made with renewable energy, and all that is fine. But we still need crude oil, and we're going to need it for decades to come.
And because energy needs are expanding greatly, and that's a good thing. That means prosperity, really.
Absolutely. And the excuse me, the resource from Canada, the Canadian oil, U.S. refineries in both the Midwest and the Gulf Coast are specifically designed to process that oil. So by getting that oil from, I believe Canada is the fourth largest holder of oil reserves in the world, you have a great resource base, and you have refineries in the United States that are designed to process that resource base. They've spent billions of dollars just so they can process Canadian oil.
Yes, and then so all of that is that common sense, that we need to bridge those two industries together with safe pipelines.
Absolutely.
Bill Salvin is with us, spokesman for Bridger Pipeline again. Bill, I want to go back to, you talked about that route and changing that route a little bit. The previous company, came in and they spent a lot of money. And then the administration, unfairly in my mind, I thought there should have been a lawsuit. I thought that was an illegal taking, but they shut the door on them, right? So when Bridger came aboard, so to speak, I go, yes, I want to see this completed, but I'm curious about the thought process that you guys went through when you look at the previous attempt there and go, well, they spent a lot of money and... You know, at the last minute, a signature just threw that all away, so to speak.
It was disappointing that project did not get completed and the way in which it did not get completed. How we view this is that there are enough economic benefits, there are enough energy security benefits that even if our in-service date slips, this is a supportable project regardless of who holds the Oval Office at any particular point. It is, again, it's a vital project for the United States. We are the needs of our crude oil are rising. We need more oil. Canada, with that large resource base, they are running out of pipeline capacity. And the previous project was part of the answer to that. Well, they're still running out of pipeline capacity, so they need new pipelines. There's a number of proposals for pipelines in Canada, but this new route, we're basically building a new energy corridor from north to south to get the energy right to where it needs to be. It to us, it makes quite a lot of sense. I know that there are opponents to the project, and we're happy to talk to them and see what we can do, see what common ground we can find, because there's always common ground to find with folks.
Yeah, thank you for that. And the opponents, they're not necessarily be opposed to the pipeline. They're more opposed to the use of oil, and that creates a different sort of narrative in trying to get this project completed. How far are we along?
We got a lot of work to do. Excuse me, I have a little bit of a frog in my throat this morning. But what we've been doing... over this summer season, we've got survey crews in the field that are doing archaeological, cultural, historic surveys, and just trying to locate the precise center line, like nailing down the specific route. Because you can design it on a computer, which is where the line is designed, but you do have to put surveyors in the field and say, okay, it's going to be at this latitude and this longitude. And so those surveyors have been out doing those, and we've had great support from the native tribes. In many cases, we have representatives from the cultural offices, the cultural preservation offices of the native tribes will be with our survey crews in case they find anything. We think we've worked very well together with them. But, it's been a very busy summer. There's a lot of work to be done specifically in Montana, going through the Montana Major Facilities Siting Act, I believe is what we're going through. We're going through that process now. And that's very detailed, giving them a lot of information, and we're working to give them all the information they have requested.
Is that where it's at right now in front of the DEQ? Do they have to re-evaluate a permitting process?
The DEQ is evaluating it, as is the Bureau of Land Management. Because we cross some federal land, there needs to be an environmental impact statement for the pipeline, for the section that runs from the border down to Guernsey, Wyoming. So we're in the process of gathering all that data, and that's what a lot of the survey work is doing, is getting that information that they can use to make a judgment on the impact of the pipeline and the things we can do to mitigate those impacts.
Is there a deadline for that?
We believe that the draft environmental impact statement will come out this fall, probably within the next 2 to 3 months. That will then, you take public comment, of course, and then the final impact statement is out next summer, and then we hopefully get a record of decision to proceed.
10 seconds, how many jobs?
We're going to have thousands of construction jobs in Montana, and millions and millions of property tax dollars in Montana.
Thank you for doing this. This is needed. We need this for our energy security.
We agree.
Yeah. Bill Salvin again with Bridger Pipeline. Good job, Bill.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Good to have you alongside as we are live once again. Every time I get out, I kind of call it 406, and we didn't get out too far here. A few blocks to the east, and it's a DoubleTree Hotel, but this is an important topic, energy. And, of course, as we look at energy, we're talking about national security. We're talking about affordable energy. If you you think inflation is an issue. It is. And why? Well, the price of energy plays a big part in that. But energy also plays a part in our economy outside of just the digging of the wells and the transporting of the oil and the refining. And we're talking with Dustin Frost today, who is with Energy Laboratories. And Dustin, a friend of mine for some time now. But this is one of those the downstream, midstream, and kind of upstream companies that support the oil industry in a unique way. Good morning, Dustin. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. You been good?
Life's good. Yep. Great to be here.
Glad to hear that. So tell me about Energy Laboratories, all right? Because this was something, as Dustin and I were kind of chatting this morning, I say, oh, you're with Energy Laboratories. I didn't know who they were. And
right.
You said they've been around 75 years and 160 employees?
Yep, 75 years, founded right here in Billings. And really, you know, with the name says it. So we're a testing laboratory, environmental lab. So we're testing water and soil samples. But really, the company started in support of the oil and gas industry with refineries here in the Billings area and then producers across the state. And we test waters and soils for to support this industry that has such an impact across the state. And I think a lot of people, you know, I've been in Billings for about 20 years now, and frankly, until I started working here, didn't really know that there were 100 people working at this company right here in Billings, and then another 60 employees at our labs in Helena and down in Wyoming as well.
And I imagine that's a familiar story with energy support companies, so to speak.
I think that's the case, right? Yeah. That the maybe are not the front line. We're not involved in the actual development of that energy, but are doing things that help to fuel that help to make sure that production can happen and continue to happen in a safe and environmentally friendly way.
So and so you need labs in various places, you need people in various places, and a lot of them too. So you guys must be producing a lot. Talk about that. Talk about the ebb and flow of your business as the industry ebbs and flows.
Yeah, so we've grown into more than just oil and gas. And so while definitely a major component of our company, we also support the mining industry in Montana. We are supporting, frankly, most of Montana's municipalities with drinking water and wastewater. That what is happening, both what I'm drinking is safe, and then in the wastewater side, that what is getting discharged, it is also safe and not causing a negative impact on the environment. And so we're that trusted source of data. That's showing that, bringing confidence into our economy.
What then? And I know it might be kind of hard to relate fully on this, but what are you finding when an oil company comes or any kind of company, and they are looking for something specifically? What are they looking for?
They have permits, right? And so there are regulations that. This industry is innovative. This industry is doing things right, and it's not oil and gas from 100 years ago, right? These guys are doing things right, and so this is what they're testing for is based on permits, regulatory permits that they have. That are showing, hey, is this safe? Is what I'm doing environmentally friendly? And that I mean, across the state, these guys are doing it right.
And maybe that's hard to tell, but what is the state of environmentally of our oil industry? I would imagine that list of things that they're looking to discover, the data that they get from these tests, I imagine that list has grown over the years.
Yeah, and the money that they're spending to make sure that they're taking out what shouldn't be going into our waters in the state. And so, you know, we just were in a talk earlier where they were talking about the amount of money and the amount of effort and, frankly, innovation that has gone into to this industry that is making it environmentally friendly.
Dustin Frost with this Energy Laboratories. It's based here in Billings, Montana. The Montana company, 75 years. And I love kind of the evolution of this as well. As you talk about getting into mining, I imagine there are a ton of different industries that could probably use your services.
That's exactly right. You know, from the mining standpoint, the innovation that's going in there with even rare earths that our country needs, right? That the work that we do that supports so many industries that are really fueling our country, our country's economy, our defense industry with what the Department of Energy and Department of Defense is doing, really saying, hey, we need to be getting these important minerals from the U.S., not from those foreign sources. And so it's a great opportunity to work with all kinds of industries.
You kind of got your finger in that pulse, too, of where they're going, because they're coming to you, probably all the way through the process, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. At the beginning, from the conception, the idea stage, to then reclamation after, right? Yeah. So as I'm in the mining or in oil and gas, right, that I'm having to bring that location, that area that I've impacted, bring it back to like it was prior to being there.
How intricate is it, Dustin? They're searching for certain elements.
Oh, it's incredible!
I know.
Yeah, the elements. We're basically testing for every element in the periodic table and finding amounts in water or can test down to such minuscule levels, thankfully both with technology, but also, I mentioned that there's 160 people working there. There are some incredibly smart scientists, chemists, individuals that understand data,
right?
Much smarter than me.
Intimidating,
that are,
maybe.
Yeah, it is intimidating that are really getting down to that minuscule, tiniest amounts to see what's in waters, what's in soils, what's in the air.
Here's an odd question, but they're looking for something specifically, whether it's they don't want it in there or they want it in there, and you're the bearer of good news and bad news at times.
Exactly. What it is that's in there, and that's a great point. That we're that third party, that independent source. That means that the data that you're getting is trusted.
Yes.
Right. We say that over and over again. That we're that trusted source. That third party, that independent look of what exactly is there.
What's next for you guys?
Growth is what's next. So, yeah, we're going into our 75th year. We've got an expansion coming right here in Billings. We're going to be nearly doubling our footprint, our physical footprint. We're in right downtown Billings. Like I say, been here for 75 years. And so, yeah, it's growth, both from the standpoint of our footprint, but then also the investment in the technology. There are machines that are doing that analysis that are in many cases are $250,000 at a time. And so we're bringing more equipment in and then more professionals as well, hopefully Montana educated experts and scientists that bringing into our lab.
Is Montana producing those?
Yeah, we do some incredible work partnering with MSU Billings and STEM programs, even at mm-hmm. even here in School District 2 or the schools around our region, and finding some great, incredible talent that's right here in Billings.
That's good to hear. I appreciate that,
right?
Too, right?
Yeah,
and they're
incredible.
The ones that always want the newest stuff, too, right?
Right, yeah. The new expensive gadgets and doodads.
Can't
sure.
work without it.
Gotta that's get right, that. Gotta have it. Yeah. Gotta
Dustin
have
Frost,
it.
Good job, man. Good to see you.
Thank you, sir.
And say hello to your family.
Absolutely.
Dustin Frost, Energy Laboratories. We've been talking about this. Make sure you visit mt.com/giveaway. It's visitmt is the website, .com/giveaway. This is coming from the Montana Department of Commerce, and it's starting now, right? They're going to do this for 7 weeks. They're giving away a weekly prize package. We did this last year, if you remember, too, and it was really cool because they're going to give away a prize package that is curated by one of the seven different Montana travel regions to showcase that that unique culture. And this one is all about Indian country in Montana. The Indian Country Experience giveaway features a package on Flathead Lake in Elmo, Montana, water people tours, and Camp Kapapa. It's a prize package there. You get a little micro cabin, 3-day, 2-night stay for two, and your choice of a tour that they're offering, whether it's museums or it's really a kind of an immersive Native American cultural experience. And so you have your choice of tours for the 2027 season. They're giving that away, but this week only. Next week it'll be a different region, but take advantage of that now. Visit mt.com/giveaway. Gary Perry joins us now as we are live from the Montana Petroleum Association annual convention at the Doubletree, House District 35 representative. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Top of the day to you. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
You are doing fine. You're always doing fine.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that.
It's a thing we choose to do.
That's right. That's right. It's you know, half of life is having the right attitude about
things.
That's
right. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
The other half of life is trying to solve some problems, you know, and or not only just solve problems. It's not the only thing that you're also trying to create opportunities and things like that.
Absolutely.
And obviously, you know, a lot of experience in the energy industry in Montana. You're here to probably gain a little bit more, but talk about, and this is maybe a question for Steve Durrett as well, but when the industry gets together and networks, what comes out of that for you?
Well, you know, I don't know if you've sat in on either of these panels in here, but, you know, one of the things that I see, and I just left actually yesterday, I was at the META meeting down in Colstrip. One of the things that I see that comes out is when people get into a room and they start talking about the successes they have, they start talking about the barriers, the problems that they have, it opens up the dialogue so that collectively they can solve problems. And so I see when they get together in meetings like this, you know, they're hearing that they're not their company or their organization isn't the only one dealing with this issue. And once they start recognizing that it's a across the industry issue, then they can, it's the first step to solving the problems and moving the industry ahead. So that's one of the reasons I like saying this. Plus, for me, you know, I come from coal initially, mm-hmm. but I'm an all of the above energy advocate, and what I see then is that we're being able to move this industry forward. Okay, plus I'm able to learn about what their problems are. You know, when I go up there and I have to hit the red and the green button,
yeah.
The more I can learn, the more I can expand my knowledge base, the better able I am to represent the constituents, and they're not the constituents in my area, you know, House District 35. They're Montanans. You know, what can we do to better serve the people of Montana and guarantee power and energy in all of its aspects for the people going forward?
Have we been short-sighted when it comes to our energy policy?
The difficult part about it is, as a country, we've decided to get rid of coal. Okay, and one of the things that I think we have to go forward with is to make sure that we establish a reliable, dependable source of energy. And it's not just for now, you know, it's for my grandkids and great grandkids. And I think when we end up with administrations in Washington that flip flop back and forth, one, investors don't want to put any money into it. Industry, whatever it is, needs certainty, even if it's difficult certainty. As long as they know what it is, they know how to deal with that certainty. Or so we've ended up with a lot of uncertainty. We're going back and forth. We're get rid of coal, keep coal. Get, you know, take the petroleum industry and minimize the or expand or make them flare. Don't make them flare. The inconsistency is a very difficult part of making sure that we can guarantee that reliability going into the future. So, the answer is kind of yes, but you know, we're coming out of a period where Colstrip supplied energy to the West Coast for 50 years. You know, well, the uncertainty part happens when, you know, Puget Sound Energy and Avista get out of that, give their ownership to Northwestern Energy, but they don't relinquish any of the of their ownership on the 500 kV lines going west.
Oh, yeah.
So now we end up with a temporary surplus of energy for Northwestern Energy. Well, you've got the Northern Plains Connector coming in for Grid United that will connect from Bismarck to Colstrip, and you'll be able to move some of that to the Midwest. Do you have to do
that? Yeah, we're coming up against it, and there's so much more to talk about, Gary.
Okay.
I've only got 15 seconds. You guys are going to tap taxes in the legislature.
I believe it's going to have to come up again, and I don't know that it'll be in the same format that we did last time. I kind of believe what we need to do is we need to revamp our whole system. We need to look at that. Instead of moving it back and forth, we need to revamp it and review it. It's not my forte.
Good job. Thank you. We'll pick up on this later. See you guys tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.